Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. When Jordan Sparks won this season's American Idol, she became one of many singers, along with Oscar winner Jennifer Hudson, whom you're hearing now, and punk singer Beth Ditto, who are breaking cultural ranks and landing on the covers of magazines, flaunting their plus sizes and hearty appetites. Now, in a little while, we'll look into the world of opera, where singers are feeling the pressure to slim down. But first, we're joined by Rachel Giza, online arts editor for the Canadian Broadcast Company, who's written on this topic. She joins us from the CBC studios in Toronto. Rachel, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hi, John. Thank you.
So Jennifer Hudson, now Jordan Sparks. I mean, is there a trend? Is this some kind of new role model that we're seeing in the world of music?
I think possibly it's a new role model. I mean, I think that, I think with someone like Jordan Sparks, it was shocking to me when I turned on, I think it was on Fox News, there was an anti-obesity activist saying, no one should vote for Jordan Sparks because she's too fat. I mean, you know, she's only a size 12. She's not a particularly large woman.
Yeah.
But what I thought was so interesting was that there really hadn't been a fuss. And in a show like American Idol, which is an enormously popular show and a very populist show at that, that there have been other singers that are, you know, not waifs. Kelly Clarkson is another one. And on the male side, Ruben Studdard. But particularly the women on the show, women of all sizes on that show have gotten a lot of respect and have had a huge number of fans.
Well, as Simon Cowell likes to keep reminding people, it's a singing competition. maybe he's right. I mean, you know, are people rooting for singers because they like the voice, or do they like singers in our society where weight is a problem? Do they like singers who kind of look like themselves?
Well, I mean, I think that that's a part of it. Absolutely. I certainly think that in the music industry, unlike, film or television or obviously modeling, that what singers are selling is themselves, is how authentic they are. And, you know, so if the music is about, you know, heartbreak and, you know, my man did me wrong or I can't find love, I think when you see, say, a Beyonce singing that, it doesn't really work. But when you see somebody who, you know, might have been the girl who wasn't invited to the prom or might have been the girl who had her heart broken, then I think it makes sense. And I think for someone like Beth Ditto, who's a punk pop singer, then I think the fact that she's 200 pounds and really bold and brassy and likes to take off her clothes on stage, then I think it really fits into the whole ethos of punk as well.
Right. Now, as you said, Jordan Sparks, size 12, you know, not really obese, but at 200 pounds, Beth Ditto, who is the lead singer for this band, The Gossip, is another matter entirely. Now, she's a Native American. I guess she's from Arkansas. Why is she so, you should pardon the pun, big in Britain, of all places?
You know, I'm not exactly sure. I mean, I think that part of it is, I mean, you know, Beth Ditto is also an out lesbian. And so I think that part of it is that she might be a bit too much for the red states. and I think that also the type of music that she sings, and I think her kind of brassiness, it might be sort of the reverse of a British invasion. There might be a bit of a U.S. invasion into England. But the U.K. media has just latched on to Beth Ditto and The Gossip, and they love her. So she's on I think June 2nd or June 3rd, she was on the cover of NME, which is sort of a real hipster,
the New Music
punk
Express.
Mainly. Yeah, New Music Express magazine. And they put her on the cover. They have an annual list of the coolest people in rock and roll, and she's their cover girl this year. And they have her on the cover in kind of like the Demi Moore pose when she was on Vanity Fair when she was pregnant, so sort of to the side. You know, one hand is covering her nipples. You can see her butt. And she's very large and very proud of her body. And I mean, she's posed naked before, and I mean, part of her stage show is to take off her clothes on stage. I just saw some images from the Glastonbury Festival, and there Beth Ditto was at it, taking off her clothes on stage. So, I mean, I think this is part of what she does, but I just think that it's captured people's imagination in the UK, and I think it just fits into her image, her music, and a sense of rebellion.
Well, this is Beth Ditto with her band, The Gossip.
Who you are, your hands stop crying, it's finally giving me.
The song's called Standing in the Way of Control from The Gossip, led by singer Beth Ditto, all 200 pounds of her, and we are talking about perhaps a new model of pop music where women of somewhat larger sizes are now being accepted. Jordan Sparks, we mentioned, Jennifer Hudson. We are speaking with Rachel Giza. She's online arts editor for the CBC and recently wrote The Fat Lady Sings for Female Musicians, Size Matters. And, you know, there is a health concern here. I mean, you know, people are not bewailing the kind of weight, the average weight of North Americans for no reason other than purely aesthetic ones, Rachel. So, I mean, you know, what do we think of someone like a Beth Ditto or a Jennifer Hudson as a role model for teenage girls?
Well, I mean, I think the health thing is, I don't think that people's concern or the fact that we haven't seen as many big women in music is because of health concerns. I mean, I think it has to do with certainly with the double standard about how women have to present themselves. And you know, you can have, I think it's much more common to have men in the music industry with a broader range of looks. They don't necessarily have to be good looking, whereas I think that there's been much more of a sort of a narrow type for women singers. I mean, I think that, you know, I don't know how healthy Beth Ditto is. I mean, she could be much more healthy than, you know, Jessica Simpson. I don't know if she exercises. I don't know, you know, what kind of food she eats. I think in terms of self-esteem as a role model for young women, I think women like, you know, Jordan Sparks and Jennifer Hudson, I think are, because I think that a lot of women are that size and a lot of girls are that size. And I think to say you can be, you don't have to fit a Barbie model and still be powerful and still be adored and still have something to say and you can still be proud of your body. I think that's a really healthy role model for young girls.
Now, you wrote about this person on Fox News after Jordan Sparks won American Idol, and it was a woman, wasn't it, who said
that
Jordan Sparks was a symbol of, quote, diabetes, heart disease, and high cholesterol, unquote.
Right.
So at least for some people, there is a kind of genuine concern for the message that it's sending.
Yeah, but again, I don't know. I mean, again, I think that, you know, when it comes to women and body size, I mean, absolutely there are health concerns with obesity. But I do think that, you know, we're talking about Jordan Sparks, who's, you know, a healthy young woman who's a size 12. Yeah. We're not talking about, you know, somebody who is 600, 700 pounds. And again, I don't know if this woman, I mean, I don't know whether I don't know what her cholesterol rates are, if Beth Ditto or, you know what I mean? I think that it's not okay to make assessments about people's health without knowing those details about them without being their doctor.
And then, of course, you at the opposite end of the scale, and again, no pun intended, but, you know, you have the whole thing with the models, you know, where they're trying now to avoid models who have that real anorexic look, because, again, there is that kind of role model that has to be thought about, you know, what kind of message is being sent. All right, you mentioned the double standard. I mean, look, there have been big women in pop music since Mama Cass, you know, from Mama Cass all the way to Queen Latifah. But as you point out, relatively few of them compared to men, where, you know, the Pixies, fronted by Frank Black, who's a really big guy. You know, back in the 70s, there was Leslie West, who led the band Mountain, which was pretty much named after him. He was a mountain of a man. you know, Jack Black, people like that. Why is it so different for men?
I think women can still continue to be judged not just on their achievements but on their appearances, whereas I think that is less of an issue for men, although, you know, certainly with the rise of the metrosexual, that's a different thing. And certainly, you know, boy bands and pop singers like Justin Timberlake are definitely sold on their sex appeal and, you know, the sort of how hard their abs are. I mean, I think what has happened for female singers, because certainly, particularly with African-American music, there has been this history, too, of women like Aretha Franklin, you know, women like Martha Wash, who was in the Weather Girls and later went on to sing for CNC Music Factory and Black Box. There have been larger women singers. But I think with the 80s and the rise of music videos and then, you know, later with things like, you know, it's not just enough for particularly a female pop singer, you know, sort of a top, not sort of someone who's doing more alternative music, but someone who's really a, you know, top of the chart kind of singer. You know, you also have a fashion line, and you have cosmetic sponsorships, and you want to have a film career like a Jessica Simpson. And so I think what's happened is that where, you know, 30, 40 years ago, you would only see a singer when they appeared on a TV show to sing. Now you see images of singers everywhere. I mean, Beyonce is on dozens of magazine covers. Jennifer Lopez is on dozens of magazine covers and in films and has a clothing line. So I think what's really changed for a lot of female singers is that it's not just about voice, that it's harder for sort of women who are more of an iconoclast or look a bit different or have a unique style. It's harder for them to get that kind of attention because
That makes it all the more remarkable that we're talking about, you know, bigger women actually getting their day in the sun, you know, and getting
to share
the spotlight.
Absolutely. And that's why I do think that, you know, I think with so much of the music industry, and again, you know, I'm speaking about sort of the narrow sort of mainstream pop side of things. So many singers, by the time, you know, their first album comes out or their first single comes out, they've really been created by a team of people, by a music producer, by a style consultant, you know, that they come sort of prepackaged, which is why a show like American Idol is so interesting, because those kids aren't prepackaged.
Right.
They're coming kind of warts and pimples and chubbiness and all. And so I think sometimes perhaps the music industry can kind of underestimate what fans are open to, because clearly a lot of the bigger women on American Idol have been big fan favorites.
Well, now, you know, there is also this kind of historical, you know, this enduring idea that a big woman will have a big, powerful voice, you know, the Aretha Franklin model. Is there any evidence to that, you know, that might in fact be the case, and that in fact size might help if you're a soul singer or a blues singer or something like that?
Well, I don't know that there's any physical evidence or biology behind the fact that a big body leads to a big voice. But I certainly think that, you know, a big woman who can flaunt it on stage, I think that adds to the persona. And I think, again, that, you know, I think that there is this tradition in blues music and in soul music of the big boned woman or the bigger woman. And it being that size was associated with sexual power and emotional power. And so I don't know if it actually helps the voice at all, but I think certainly in terms of image, there is something that, you know, about a woman who can really take up space on stage and not apologize, which I think adds to a performance.
Well, certainly Aretha Franklin knew how to take up space and to make her presence felt. We've been speaking with Rachel Giza. She's online arts editor for the CBC. She's joined us from the CBC studios in Toronto. Her article is called "The Fat Lady Sings for Female Musicians, Size Matters." You'll find a link on our website, the soundcheck page, wnyc.org, where you can also leave your comments about this topic, which we are not quite done with. But Rachel, thank you for being with us this afternoon.
Thank you very much for having me.
Still to come, the fat lady slims down. We'll hear whether looks are becoming more than a voice these days in the opera world. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. We were just talking about women with curves breaking into the world of pop and rock. But in the world of opera, if you're sitting there waiting for the fat lady to sing, you may be waiting a long time. In a moment, we'll talk with a soprano who's been feeling the pressure to keep thin. But first, we're joined by Anne Majette, classical music critic at the New York Times. Anne, welcome back.
for having me.
Is the world of opera, is this sort of like, you know, what we were just talking about in the world of soul and R&B or blues, you know, the idea of the big voice coming out of the big body? Is that basically the idea in opera as well?
Well, it's been a widely held perception, certainly, and compounded by things like Maria Callas losing weight and diminishing, arguably, in her vocal powers after she lost weight. There's an idea that the bigger you are, the better you can support your voice. I don't think that's actually borne out physically, but I think there are some heavy people who get used to supporting their voice with the extra weight and maybe have to rethink their technique a little bit when they lose some of that weight.
Now,
so there is a certain correlation.
Is that changing, though? Are we seeing kind of the reverse of what's happening in the world of pop music, where there's kind of an acceptance of larger singers?
Well, we certainly are seeing it at the Met and other houses. I think as there's more and more emphasis on television transmission and live transmission, one is hearing certainly anecdotal rumors that heavy singers are feeling threatened or not getting contracts, and that people are being looked at far more for their appearance than simply for their voices.
Well, now, Rachel Giza of the CBC was pointing out that with the rise of music videos, suddenly pop singers were not just pop singers. You know, it was a look. It was a line of clothing. It was a line of cosmetics as well. With opera, it's always been a visual medium. Is it somehow even more visual now that it's being, you know, put up on movie screens and things like that?
I think it would like to be as visual. I think it desperately wants to play along, and that with some of its stars, like, for instance, Anna Netrebko, the truly beautiful Russian soprano with also a very good voice, you were seeing the kind of mediaization of opera in that way. But, I mean, there have always historically been operatic fat ladies. The saying, "It ain't over till the fat lady sings," has a reason for existing.
Right. Well, here's the big question, and of course a question that has already generated quite a bit of controversy in the opera world. Is it a good thing to be considering how a singer looks when you expect him or her, and again, it's mostly her that we're talking about, to be acting as well as singing?
It's mostly her, although, of course, Pavarotti is one of the biggest examples in many senses of the word.
Yeah.
I don't think it's necessarily unreasonable because people are looking more to the acting. I mean, this art form is getting older and older, and we're getting farther and farther away from the traditions that spawned the operas that continue to be performed for the most part. And the newer operas that are being written are more cinematic in any case. You have Dead Men Walking or Little Women. So I think that it's not unreasonable as you try to reach out for audiences, for new audiences, to think of it as a theatrical experience. That said, the experience of a great and thrilling voice is also theatrical and very visceral if you're hearing it in the house, and it would be too bad to downplay that altogether.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fine tightrope people walk between sort of permitting the very, very large women to and men to go unchecked and giving them a word, which is, it does become a health concern as well, certainly when people are as huge as some of the singers in recent years one can think of. That's not necessarily great for your health.
Right. Is it a double standard, though? I mean, are men not held to the same standard of body type as women?
Oh, I think men are held to the same standard. And the Times recently published, within the last year, published a profile of an English baritone that emphasized how much he worked out and how he worked out every day. And a colleague of mine pointed out with some annoyance that that's pretty much a part of the life of being an entertainer today. Whatever field you're in, you have to sort of think about your appearance a little bit. I don't think it's more for women than for men, but I think that recently we've had more examples of larger women. That said, I think there's also a bit of, not hysteria, but possible paranoia that this problem, quote-unquote, of not wanting to hire larger women is getting worse and worse. Many reasons are held up for why people are possibly not hired, and it's a little bit of a crapshoot, and it's a little bit of luck of the draw. There's a bit of a lottery element in it as well.
All right. We're speaking with Anne Majette, classical music critic at the New York Times, and also joining us on the phone now is Shayna Blake-Hill. She's a New York-based soprano who, I'm told, Shayna, recently went from a size 10-12 to a size 4. I'm not sure what that means, but I guess it's good. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Welcome to the program. More importantly, perhaps, you just recorded a piece by the Chinese-American composer Bright Sheng with the Seattle Symphony for the Naxos label. So, you know, you don't need to look a certain way when you're making a recording. At what point did you start to really consider how you appeared physically? And, you know, was there any particular incident that led you to, you know, hire a trainer and lose the weight and all the rest?
I don't think there was a particular incident, and since I'm not, I'm much more of a performing artist than I'm a recording artist. I'm certainly not thinking as a recording artist in terms of my appearance not mattering, but I am regularly on the stage and often in costume and or often in evening gowns in front of an orchestra, and I think there wasn't a particular instance that led me to go and get a trainer, but I definitely believe that as my opportunities began appearing more frequently and travel and stress became more of a factor in my life, I definitely felt that fitness was a better idea for, you know, staying healthy and not getting sick and keeping my energy at the level that I needed to keep it in order to put things together very quickly, as these days in the business you have to do, and remain sharp both physically and mentally.
Mm-hmm.
So those factors, I think, more than anything else, I was tired. I had just gotten out of a young artist program and at Los Angeles Opera, and you know, they work, every company works young artists pretty hard, and you get tired and you think, well, how am I going to keep doing this and have the energy? So more than anything else, that was the issue. But I think if I'm honest with myself, I also believe that, you know, you have to, as particularly as a soprano, not have any holes in your game. And when you're putting yourself out on the market as a new young artist and asking people like managers and companies to take a chance on you, it's really important that you have them believe as much as you believe that you are in it for the long haul as a professional.
And so having the look as well as the sound can give
absolutely.
You perhaps a bit of a competitive edge. Yeah.
To be able to do any number of very difficult things on stage that more and more the productions are asking for, and to be available both as an instrument with a great degree of flexibility, but also as a body with a great degree of flexibility in order to tell a story.
All right. Now, how has the weight loss and working out affected your singing? I mean, this goes back to that age-old canard, you know, the
right.
big body coming, the big voice coming out of the big body.
Once again, I think that that's largely a fallacy. I think that better fitness can only ever make you a better singer, particularly better core strength. Because so much of, I can only speak to my technique, but so much of my technique is centered in my core muscles. And I don't even really believe that I knew how much I was missing until I started gaining the strength and realizing that my breath ability to hold a phrase became better, that my ability to also breathe when one is nervous
right,
also
right.
helps quite a bit, and also to be able to deal with the long endurance of a particularly long role, the wear and tear becomes less, and that's a significant difference.
Well, let's hear some of the results. We're speaking with the soprano Shayna Blake Hill, and she has also recently recorded this music from the soundtrack to the film The Mission. From the score to The Mission, that music features our guest Shayna Blake Hill, soprano based here in New York these days, although, as she told us, a product of the Young Artists Program out in L.A. at the L.A. Opera. We also have Anne Majette, classical music critic of the New York Times, with us on the phone as well. And Deborah Voigt's very public firing from an opera in the UK, the so-called Little Black Dress scandal of a couple of years ago, was followed by gastric bypass surgery so that, you know, Deborah Voigt could lose a substantial amount of weight. And, of course, that has been followed by the usual back and forth, what did it do to the quality of her voice? What do you think it did, if anything, to Deborah Voigt's singing?
Well, first of all, I think that firing incident was way overblown. I think that there was a little more to the story than just that they said, oh, you're too fat. And Deborah Voigt is not the same kind of big name in England that she is here in America. But apart from that, I think the voice is not perhaps as shining as it was a few years ago, but I would not say that is necessarily a result of the weight loss. What I hear in her voice are things I've always heard in her voice. I might say there's a little bit less focused or a little bit less energy is perhaps the wrong word, but I find a little bit less of a center of excitement in it. And I think maybe she just has more things on her plate these days, or it could
things
be a natural
like what?
Result of the way her voice is aging. I mean, not that she's old, but voices change as one matures.
Mm-hmm.
I think that all of the talk surrounding it is an example of the kind of hysteria that can rapidly grow around this topic as well. I don't think she was forced to make this choice, although I think she felt compelled to do it. I'm sure she feels much better now that she's done it in terms of taking off the weight. But Shana earlier touched on something that I think is very relevant to this discussion, is that there's a psychological component to the weight gain in the first place, that you're in this job, you're in an amazingly emotionally vulnerable position. You're standing up there on stage totally naked in front, figuratively naked in front of an audience of
sometimes
thousands.
Not figuratively.
Sometimes
depends on the
Salome,
role.
Literally.
Yeah, now, I mean, we have an email here from a listener who signs herself simply as one fat lady who sings, you know, 5'6", 240 pounds, completely healthy. She writes, I'm so angered to hear that there are so-called activists out there. This goes back to what we were talking about before with Rachel Giza earlier, who are spending their time reinforcing our societal prejudices against larger people. When will American culture finally grow up and accept people as they are instead of demanding that the other conform to make the majority feel more comfortable? Without suggesting that Deborah Voigt felt that, you know, that kind of pressure to conform, what do you think, Anne, about, and then Shana, I want to ask you the same question. What do you think about the trend towards slimmer singers? Is it a good thing? Is it a double-edged sword in a way?
Well, I think that any singer has to be, as Shana said, at home in your body. I mean, it's a very physical thing that you're doing. There's an athletic component to it. That doesn't necessarily depend on how heavy or light you are. But sure, it's important to be aware of your body. I think a point you were touching on earlier about American Idol that's interesting is that that's a public contest, not a record-generated, not one that's created by record companies. And I think the heavier singers on American Idol reflect the fact that the American population is heavier, that people are looking and seeing women who look more like themselves. It's just like the Dove soap campaign, which
right.
is showing women as they really are.
So then why, you know, Shana, why do we have all these opera singers slimming down? Is it simply, you know, everyone realizes it's a competitive field and they need to be at their best? Or you know, do you feel that kind of, that low-level background pressure to lose weight?
Well, it's just the life of an entertainer in general is fraught with pressure. I don't think that that's ever going to change. But I do want to bring together two of the points that your former guests, both Rachel Giza and Anne Majette, have just made. Number one, Rachel Giza said, you know, authenticity is the reason why some of these people on American Idol, et cetera, are gaining popularity. And also, as Anne Majette just said, you know, that the life of an entertainer is always going to involve a certain amount of self-maintenance and or fitness, and that all of those things should somehow lend itself to what your decisions are about your fitness. I mean, for me in particular, coming out of a young artist program, going into the business, you have a certain degree of the sense of the fact that your instrument belongs to everybody else. And somehow you have to regain control of that and feel an ownership and authenticity as an artist and be able to bring that to the stage, which is what becomes exciting.
And as Anne said, just feel comfortable in your own skin.
Absolutely.
Shana Blake-Hill.
Can do that.
Shana Blake-Hill is a soprano based here in New York. Anne Majette, classical music critic of the New York Times. To the two of you, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you for taking this on.
This is Soundcheck.